Welcome to Mindful School Marketing, your go-to podcast for personal and professional growth.
We're school marketers, business owners, and moms passionate about connecting other school professionals with tools and strategies for success.
We love solving problems, exploring new ideas, and thinking outside the box. Let's transform your school and life starting right now. Welcome to Mindful School Marketing. I'm Aubrey Bursch.
I'm Tara Clays. Today, we're joined by Shay Box. Shay is a brand strategist and Enneagram practitioner who helps you unlock the fullness of your life's work. She believes that personal and professional growth go hand in hand and that the Enneagram is a helpful map for both. We're so excited to have you here today, Shay. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. I'm super thrilled about this concept of this podcast. I cannot wait to get in the conversation with you.
And I am so glad you're here too, especially because I had a session with you yesterday for my Enneagram. But can you tell us a little bit more about yourself?
Sure. So I've been doing branding for about 12 years. So I've done everything from WordPress development, logo design, brand strategy, all of it. And I had a few years ago, I had a quite popular WordPress theme called Foodie Pro in the food blogging space. It was very successful, so I was very thankful for that. But I ended up selling it a few years back just because it didn't feel authentic to me anymore. I was ready to move on to something else. So I sold that and then moved more deeply into brand strategy. And along with that, I was doing some personal growth through the Enneagram and realized that I could actually combine the Enneagram with the brand strategy that I was already doing. And so that's led me to where I am today.
That's excellent. And I will say, going back in time, that I met Shay at a WordCamp, which is a conference for WordPress geeks, the first one I ever went to. And we ended up sitting at a lunch table together in Baltimore. I don't know if you remember that, but
I do. Yeah.
But I've been following Shay ever since and have been following all of her Enneagram stuff and have had my Enneagram done with her. My husband and I did it together as a couple this summer, and then our adult children did it too. So we found it a very helpful exercise for us in understanding our relationships with ourselves and with each other. So we're really excited to talk more about the Enneagram today. So so let's get rolling. I also want to talk about your parenting too. But why don't you start by telling us about what the Enneagram is and how it's used?
Sure. So the Enneagram itself is simply a symbol. It's a nine-pointed symbol, and it's been used for thousands of years through many spiritual practices and communities for personal growth. And around in the 70s, a couple of psychotherapists were using the Enneagram and realized that they could create a typology of personality on top of what the Enneagram already represented. And so today, when someone talks about the Enneagram, what they're talking about is a personality typing system. Well, most of the time, unless you're like in a deep spiritual school, then they're talking about fourth way teachings. But what it means is that essentially anyone could represent one of these nine personality types. And we can actually break that down even further into 27 subtypes. These are things that tell us what our personality structure is, how we've grown, what our growth path is. And so the Enneagram is more than just a typology system. It's actually a map for inner growth. It actually tells you like where you naturally grow.
I love that. And I found when I had my session with you, I found that so helpful. Like it was really helpful. And I had no idea. Honestly, I've heard the word Enneagram like thrown out in the space, especially being like an entrepreneur and business owner and stuff like that. I've heard it thrown out in the space. I'm like, do I really need to know that? And it really, it is so helpful in so many ways. So I'm really excited to dive in more with you about that. But as we're looking at the Enneagram, you know, our podcast, we talk about mindfulness, right? Mm-hmm. I'd love to hear what you think, how mindfulness relates to the Enneagram. Like, what would you say about that?
Yeah. So, I mean, Enneagram is completely about self-awareness, and mindfulness is about observation, being mindful of what's around you, being present. And this growth path that I'm talking about through the Enneagram, the point of growth path is to bring you more into presence, bring you more into awareness. What happens is we end up going through our lives with all of these automatic patterns, these personality patterns, emotional habits, and limiting beliefs. They're automatic and unconscious. And so by learning these things about ourselves and learning how to like observe them and identify them, we become more present, more mindful, and we live with less judgment of ourselves and other people at the same time.
How does the Enneagram compare to other personality tests? Like, I know there's of course the Myers-Briggs and the DISC and the StrengthsFinder and all these different things, and I've done all of them, but how does the Enneagram compare, and why did you kind of go with the Enneagram route?
Yeah. So it's interesting because I've always been averse to Myers-Briggs for some reason. I don't know why, but that's probably the most popular one. And there have been people who can like compare and contrast Myers-Briggs to Enneagram. I don't feel like they're even in the same playing field. And then there's, you know, the other ones, like you mentioned, DISC, StrengthsFinder. I love StrengthsFinder for a professional person. StrengthsFinder is amazing, and I think everyone should do it. But there's something different about those. Those are focused on behavior, like what our behaviors are. And Enneagram is more about motivation. Enneagram is based on a lot of childhood psychology and how we develop our ego over time. And it's less about like what we actually do in the world and more about why we do the things we do in the world. Does that help like differentiate?
Yeah, I think absolutely. So. Yeah.
I would say, you know, in our conversation, in my session with you yesterday, we talked about both, like both of us are parents, right? And I was asking you like, okay, as a parent, how can I apply the Enneagram to my kids and my parenting? And you gave me some good advice. So I'd like to hear, could you please share with our audience a little bit about how finding out more about your Enneagram can help you in the parenting world?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think number one, what it does is it causes us to be more self-aware of like what we do in our relationship with our kids and the things that we might require of our kids, the things, the expectations we have of ourselves and how we deal with our kids. Because I know for me, I'm an Enneagram 4, very emotional, but I'm a specific kind of 4, a self-pres 4, which means I'm emotional, but I don't share my emotions with other people. And so I find a lot of times I end up unconsciously relying on my kids to fill my emotional needs. And that was a huge thing that I learned. And I don't want to say struggle with it, but I notice it. I observe it like, oh, Shay, it's not their responsibility to make sure that you are emotionally secure right now because they have their own lives and their own problems. But then also on the flip side, I think what's really interesting is when we do typing sessions and I start to explain to people like why their type is the way their type is, they're like, oh crap, how have I screwed up my kids? What did I do? That's what they want to know.
I was that parent yesterday. I was like worried. Remember in the session, I was like, I'm totally screwing up my kids. I just know it. They're
And what I have to remind people is that you haven't screwed up your kids. Let me just say that, because it's part of natural human evolution that we develop an ego, we develop a personality, and we actually have to do that to become mature human beings. And so every single personality structure is based on some core unmet need during childhood. And what we can drill these unmet needs down to are 3 things. If we look at the 3 centers of the Enneagram, we can see that there are 3 core unmet needs. Now there's more intense unmet needs underneath those, but 3 core unmet needs are for holding, mirroring, and safety. So as parents, if we're constantly just doing our best to create space for our kids and know, like have them know that they are valuable in the space that they're in, if we can mirror their emotions back to them, and if we can make sure that they feel safe and secure, then we're doing everything we could possibly do. And so that's like the only tip I can give for parenting. I'm in the midst of parenting now. I don't get it right most of the time, so I can't say that I know what I'm doing there, but I do know that these 3 core things are what cause most of the the pain and strife in the human experience. And so if we can try to focus on those three things in our kids, then we're doing better and trying to heal a little bit through their generation. Yeah.
Yeah. Have you done the profile for your kids? You know what their Enneagrams are? Can you do that for children? What age? I mean, are we born with whatever we are?
So this is a hot debated topic. So there are some people who think you can type your kids as early as seven, because seven is the age where we really, like, our personality structure is pretty set by the time we're seven, but we continue to grow our ego, develop our ego through our early 20s. And so, like, for instance, my oldest, I thought he was an eight for the longest time. I was like, I swear he's an eight. This kid is an eight. And now he's like 12 and I'm like, wow, maybe he's a seven. Oh my gosh, he might be a seven. So I don't think you can really know. Uranio Paez is a great Enneagram teacher. And he says that children are much closer to essence. And so they're going to exhibit traits of their arrow points far more easily than their core personality type. So I think with kids, you just don't know. My opinion is you just don't know. All you can do is try to love and support them, create space for them, create safety. And then when they're adults, they'll do this work on their own, because that's another key thing is Enneagram work is self-development work. We can't do this work on behalf of anyone else. We can only do it on behalf of ourselves. And so that includes our kids too.
Yeah, which is a shame. I would love for this Enneagram. I would love to just have magically, like, get everyone so in my family so interested in and be like, why don't you do some self-development work? But my kids are super young, so it sounds like we have a ways to go before they would be on that path.
Yeah
I know we talked earlier about the fact that your kids attend Montessori school, and I know you're really involved in that, in their schooling and in your parenting with them. Does the philosophy of Montessori overlap at all with sort of the approach of Enneagram? Because I know it is it's a different model than a traditional school. So how does that fit with your sort of approach with the Enneagram, I guess is my question.
100%. And in fact, it's actually my kids' schooling that has taught me a lot of the things that I make connections with the Enneagram. I don't know if you guys know this or not, your kids are still pretty young, Aubrey, but once Montessori kids get into elementary age, there's something called the cosmic curriculum. Yes, you do know this. Good. Yes, because that has been, I mean, yes, Montessori is wonderful for preschool age infants, toddlers. It's amazing, the independence and the practical life and all of those things are amazing. But I think the real magic of Montessori is in elementary, because of this cosmic curriculum. There are four or five great lessons, depending on which school you go to, that teach all the way from the beginning of the universe, all the way up until the evolution of man. And they learn these lessons every single year. And it's actually, my oldest son took a year off from Montessori school when he was in the fourth grade. Like I said, I thought he was an eight. He's a challenging child. He's got ADHD and ODD. So we took a year off of school and tried homeschool. And I had to give him this lesson because we were trying to follow the curriculum so he could go back in. And I gave him this lesson about stellar nucleosynthesis. He was in the fourth grade, okay? And this is something these kids learn in the fourth grade. But the way that the lesson was set up, I understood stellar nucleosynthesis for the first time. And there was like this deep spiritual lesson that was taught within it. It was a science lesson. But what it really taught me is that particles within the universe were attracted to one another and they combine to create something new. And this is an essence creation. And it's these hydrogen atoms that combine to create, what is next? I don't even know. Whatever the next element in the periodic table is. And they combined until it got so heavy that it just burst. And I was like, oh my gosh, that is creativity right there. That is in essence what we're doing throughout life. We're bringing previously unrelated ideas together. And there's this combustion that happens to create something new. And that's when I really realized that, especially in the Montessori program, they're not just teaching scientific principles and math and all of that. They're teaching these really deep spiritual things about life. In fact, Maria Montessori has a book, many books about spiritual development of children, but one called Psychogeography. She actually thought that through geometry, you could teach the child spiritual truths. And these aren't religious things. They're not like Christian or Jewish or Islam or anything like that. They're like a deep, like the psyche of the child is what they're forming. And they do that with so much respect and so much care that these children come out of elementary school knowing everything that came, they are the product of everything that came before them. And they don't just mean their parents. They mean coral in the ocean and bacteria in the soupy whatever that formed the earth. They also know that they have an impact on everything that comes after them. And so it's just this beautiful spiritual element of Montessori that I connect with so, so deeply. Yeah.
I don't know if you do this for your Montessori school, but I'm always like, so when are you going to open the parent section of the Montessori school so I can go back and redo my entire education? By the way, 100. I was like, since we have so much disruption here, I see that as a huge opportunity for many schools like Montessori school, but I feel the same way. I'm so passionate about it. And I just thought, oh, this looks like a good school for my kids to go to. And little did I realize that as I'm studying, like you are, the curriculum, I'm like, oh my gosh, amazing. Yeah. So amazing. Fun.
100%. I do feel like it's great that my kids are in Montessori school, but I have learned and I have grown since they've been in there, which is, I can't imagine anything better. Yeah.
So as we're thinking of schools in general, with your work with schools too, I'm sure you work with a lot of administrators and school leaders. How do you see the Enneagram being able to help, you know, schools, professionals and administrators be able to either work better or more together as a team?
For sure. So there's a couple of ways that this could be done. So one is obviously in the branding of the school. So I do marketing and branding for a couple of Montessori schools and a Montessori teacher training center, which, by the way, Virginia Montessori teacher training is awesome. I think there are a couple ways that could be done. So in branding, we can use the Enneagram by one, identifying the archetype of the brand itself and the audience that we want to reach with that brand. And there are some things that can be done through the Enneagram to make sure we are resonating with those audiences that want to be reached. And then also within the school itself, if you know what your teacher's Enneagram types are, or they themselves know their Enneagram types, then there's a whole nother level of collaboration and cooperation and just how the school can be managed that can happen once you have that level of self-awareness in your staff.
Super interesting. I mean, I think, well, just those two things are quite different, but they both impact like a MarCom department within an independent school, understanding your target audience, which, you know, what that type might be. And then, understanding how you relate to your colleagues,
yeah.
Which, I mean, it's like with your partner too. I mean, and your children as they get older, like mine. So that's really fascinating. We wanted to kind of dig into who you are and talk about schools, but I really think we need to now kind of take a step back and talk a little bit more about the Enneagram, because you described it really well. But there are 9 types, right, within, and then you mentioned arrows and wings. And so I know we don't have hours to talk about this, but I really would like if you would walk through the 9 types. And I know Aubrey and I have each had you do our type, and Aubrey's a 4 and I'm a 1. So maybe you can talk a little bit about those specifically, but kind of go through 1 through 9 in a cursory way.
Sure, I could do it really quickly, just go through them and then we could talk about your types. So we'll start with the body types, which are 8, 9, and 1. 8 is called the challenger because they're very good at leading. They're very justice-centered. They want everything to be fair in the world. That would be the easy way to explain them. Of course, all of these, there's nuanced explanations that we won't be able to get to. 9s are called the peacemakers. They tend to put others' needs ahead of their own. And so they become almost like sleepy to their own needs. But they're great at mediating conversations, great at bringing different ideas together in one space. So they're called the peacemakers. And type 1s are also very justice-centered. These are called the perfectionists. They seek out imperfections in the world and find ways to create perfection from them. So they're very detail oriented. These are people that want to bring more goodness into the world. Let's just put it that way. And then we have the heart types. Heart types are 2s, 3s, and 4s. 2s we'll call the pleasers or the befrienders, as Beatrice Chestnut calls them. These are people who really are relationship focused, and their whole world almost revolves around creating relationships, creating friendships, befriending people, and getting needs met through some kind of mutual action. And then there are the type 3s. Type 3s are called the achievers. These are people who are super efficient. They are the goal winners of the world. They're very goal-oriented and always need to be working towards something, it seems like. They have a big issue with slowing down and just being instead of doing. And then we have the type 4s, which are, we could call them the individualists, the meaning makers, or the artists of the world. Not all 4s are creative though, so that can kind of be a misnomer. But 4s are deeply emotional, very empathic. Not all 4s share their emotions, but they experience a lot of emotions. And these are the people that see like true deep beauty in the world. They're always looking for substance and depth. And then we have the head types, which are 5, 6, and 7. 5s are the observers. These are people who care deeply about gaining more knowledge, observing what's going on around them, but they're also can build a castle around themselves at times and create distance between themselves and others. The 6s are the loyalist is what we call them. They are really concerned with safety. They're excellent troubleshooters. They can see problems coming from a mile away. But they can experience some anxiety because of that gift of being able to think about what might be coming. And then we have the 7s that are also head types. These are like party people. They're the life of the party, really. I have lots of fun 7s in my life, and I don't know what I would do without them because they just think everything's so fun and everything's awesome. They're eternal optimists. So that's 8 to 7 around the Enneagram would be like the basic introduction to all the types. Yeah. So I'm curious, Tara, since you learned you were a 1, what was the thing that you were like, this is the thing that defines me, or what did you learn that was most surprising?
You know, I mean, even when you go through those descriptions, for me, I still like think that I'm a 3 because I feel like I just feel like that description is me, but I don't like it. I mean, I think I remember I was so relieved to learn that I was not a 3 because I just didn't want maybe those are the things you don't like about yourself. So I appreciate the fact that I'm a 1 because I am very perfectionist and I do like to, you know, find things that aren't working and fix them. So that definitely does fit me. I do definitely have some of that can't stop always going, doing part too. So talk about how, I mean, I'm sure that people have different elements of different numbers, right? And so the one that rises to the top is the one that you are. Is that how that works? Talk a little bit about how the numbers relate and how you can have more than one, or what those wings and arrows are.
For sure. So you only have one core personality type. But here's the thing, we come into the world in a unitive consciousness. So when we're born as babies, We actually think we're part of our mother's body, and it takes us a little while to realize we're this separate being. Well, that continues beyond our physical body and towards our mental states and our emotional states, and realizing that we are this separate individual spiritually from everyone else. And so that is what happens when we create personality. And so it's almost like, think of the Enneagram symbol, which I have on here. Think of the Enneagram symbol. You are this whole entire thing. But what happens is you get really scared, or some trauma happens in some way in your childhood, and you go over to one number and you sit down and you're like, oh, this feels safe and comfortable here. I'm going to stay here for a while. And your personality type keeps you safe in the world. It helps you to grow. It does what it needs to do. The difference is we're not seven-year-old kids who need safety anymore. We're like grown adults who are in control of our own lives. And so what we start to do through the Enneagram work is learn how to break out of that box and realize that the essence of who we are, is much bigger than this one personality type. And so, for instance, Tara, for you, you're a one. So you have two wings, 9 and 2, which means sometimes you could take on some strategies of the 9 and 2 to be a more mature whole person. You also have arrows to 7 and 4. And so there are qualities of 7 and 4 that you take on either unconsciously or consciously when in stress or in growth, to have other outlets. Like, you can't just be a perfectionist your whole life. Sometimes you have to relax and have a party. Sometimes you have to go deep into your emotions and create something. These are things that make up your whole human being, your fully human self. You're not just one type, but your personality, your ego structure is based off of one particular Enneagram type.
That was so amazing. And I will say, similar to Tara, first of all, I took like 15 Enneagram tests online and I hated the results of all of them. They were pointing me as an 8 and a 5. And so when we had our session, I was pleasantly surprised to hear I was a 4, although I wasn't thrilled with being a 4 because I wanted to be the 3, because all the cool entrepreneurial people are 3s, at least in my mind. But once you explained the 4, I was like, oh yeah, that's me. And so I think when you were talking about the 4 for me, what did you say? Like, you said my coping strategies or my way to balance out my 4 to be able to better serve. I forgot what my, I would have to look like, what are my arrows that I would, and how would that look? Yeah.
So I'll show this again. So you're a 4. So your wings are 5 and 3, which is why 5 came up for you on the test. You are very knowledge driven. Like, you like to research and stuff. But then you also have arrows to 1 and 2. And so you're, for a self-press 4 specifically, the arrow to 1 is really strong because we're very action-oriented people, unlike maybe the more dominant social 4 that's more known out there in the world. So you have these paths to 1, 2, 3, and 5 that are all available to you. And you naturally go to them unconsciously, but you can also consciously go to them to take on higher aspects of those types, the more positive, truly gifted pieces of those types. Yeah.
That was, you can so totally fun. Go to that 3 then, Aubrey. You can take it. You can have the 3. I don't want it.
But I mean, that's truly, awesome. I think what that points to is me trying to self-diagnose myself on all those online tests. It's not a good idea, probably. And then maybe that's what you run into in your work. People come to you thinking they're like one thing. And then you're like, oh, yeah, absolutely. Actually, when we dive into this, not so much.
Yeah, I think about half the time that happens. Tests are only accurate, I would say 50 to 60% of the time, because there are nuances that the online test can't really pick up. Like, it thought you were an 8 or a 5, and you're definitely not an 8. I could tell that right away. And you're definitely not a 5. I could tell that right away. So digging deeper into your story, your childhood, like how you experienced your early adulthood, the computer test can't really do that. So we did that together and landed on a type that you felt really good for you. And it wasn't like I told you what type you are. I was just like, this is my hypothesis. Let me explain why. And you're like, yes, absolutely. So that's what it should be like. And a lot of times people will come to me having taken a test and they're like, oh, I don't really understand the results. It doesn't make a lot of sense. And sometimes the test got them right, but they don't really know why it got them right. And so I do typing sessions to help kind of demystify that. Yeah.
Can you describe what goes in for people who might be interested? What is a typing session?
Sure. So it's a 2-hour interview where I ask a ton of questions. We go through all kinds of things. And I try to respect the boundaries of whoever I'm sitting in front of, but I do ask questions that oftentimes do go deep. We bring up childhood stuff. We bring up things that might've happened to them in their 20s, how they experience life, what their relationships are like. It's not your typical like discovery meeting for a branding project. This goes way, way deeper. And so I get those answers. I make connections, notes for myself on a sheet of paper. And then I show them two types. And I say, I think you could either be this one or this one. And then we talk about what those two types are. And then oftentimes they'll pick the one that I thought they were. And we'll talk about it. And I'll say, okay, I think this is why. And we explain it. We break down the type. We talk about wings and arrows. We talk about coping strategies, how to move forward. And hopefully it's like a catalyst for really doing deep work with the Enneagram going forward. Because this isn't something you do one time. That's like, oh, that was great. I'm self-aware now. No, it's like just the start of it. And then we can keep going with it for years, for our entire lifetimes, really. Yeah.
That's great. It's all about the constant learning that is life, right? And yes. this personal and professional growth we have to go through. Well, time is flying by. We'd love to ask you some questions that we ask all our guests. So are you ready?
Sure, go for it.
All right. So what are the most important things you do to grow personally and professionally?
Yeah. So I think the most important thing I do is it's this Enneagram work. I do it for myself. I work with coaches who have helped me through my growth path, take classes, learn, read, everything I can about my personality type structure and how I break out of it. So I would say that's probably the biggest thing that I do. Not a surprise. Yeah,
that was an easy one. Yeah. what do you think the most important things we can do? What are the most important things or one important thing we can do to be more mindful?
Learn how to observe ourselves without judgment. Learning how we react and like noticing it in the moment is really, really hard. But then what's even harder is not judging ourselves for it and realizing that observing is part of the process. I think that would probably be my key thing.
That's so good. And that is a constant battle.
Especially for battle. One, I think. Yeah.
Always yeah, like.
For sure.
But thank you. And so now we like to end our chats with some rapid fire questions. So I'm very curious about this. What is like one book that has made an impression on you that you would want included in the high school curriculum?
With a high school curriculum, I was thinking little kid books. Okay, so high school curriculum, I would say the Howard Zinn Project. And I think that's probably in some schools, but the Young People's History of the United States has been amazing. I think it's not everywhere. It should be, yeah.
Cool. And what are you reading right now?
I am reading this... Surprise, The Spiritual Dimensions of the Enneagram. I'm always reading an Enneagram book. Yes.
Oh my gosh, are you going to run out of reading of Enneagram reading books at some point? Or hopefully people are producing them fast enough so you can keep up with that.
You know, I don't think I will run out because I'm gradually going further and further back. So like older Enneagram type books, because there's so much knowledge out there. So I don't know if I will.
That's true. I didn't even think about that because it's pretty much timeless. I mean, I'm sure there are new nuances and things, but it is in essence like been here for a long time, right? So
yeah. And I want to get back to the root of it. I don't want it to be like I'm a 4. I can't do what everybody else is doing. I need to get back to the root of it.
I love it. What is one app you couldn't live without?
Yeah. So I think I'm going to go with Lightroom. It's the Adobe photo editing app. I don't think I could live without that. Nothing to do with mindfulness. It's probably vain as heck, but I edit all of my photos and I have to.
Yeah. You do some beautiful photographs. Your photos of your kids. Thank you. I love following you on Instagram. Okay. Our last question is, what is one great piece of advice that you can leave us with, Shay?
One great piece of advice. I didn't think about this. We remember that we're all tender mammals with evolutionary potential. And just remember, like, you are a mammal. There are thousands, millions of years of genetic information running through you that's unconscious in your body. but that you have the evolutionary potential to change things, to do better, to grow.
How wonderful. Wow. That's inspirational.
I know. I want to make that like a quote card and throw it on Instagram. That's awesome.
It is. Yeah. Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Shay. Where can people find you online?
On my website, shaybox.com, and on Instagram at shaybox. Yeah. Thank you.
Great. Thank you so much.
Loved having you.
Yeah. Thanks.
Thank Bye. You. I love this conversation.
Thanks for joining us on the Mindful School Marketing Podcast.
We'd love it if you pop into iTunes and leave a review, 5-star preferred. Let us know how you like the show. It helps us improve what we're doing and helps others find us too.